Hey, this is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. Well, it's been way too long, but I'm so happy to welcome back Jessica Ellis. Witty and wonderful. She's a graduate of UCLA and the American Film Institute and made her feature filmmaking debut with the acclaimed coming-of-age movie, What Lies West.
Well, Jessica, it is always a delight. You're one of the funniest people that I know. Your insights are brilliant. I love following you on all of the social media platforms. You're on Blue Sky now, and you're, you know, forever going viral because of your great thoughts. So it's just, and you're just one of the nicest people I know. So, Jessica, thanks for doing this. How are you?
Oh, I am great. It is so wonderful to be back talking to you. I love coming on this show, and I'm so glad we have a nice meaty topic today. I've been really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's always hard to think of a new theme. I think, I've had people where they're like, yes, I want to do it. And then it takes like 6 months to think of something they're passionate about. And I have two screenwriters kind of going through that right now. And they've gone through several drafts of ideas. I think writers, we just do that a lot. We're like, we can do better. We're going to come up with something else.
Yeah.
And so I love this idea. I think it's a topic near and dear to your heart. Of course, my heart too. Of course, female sexuality on screen. So we're living in an era where sex is like a dirty word, or it's getting debated, and you know, it's like we're becoming more puritanical. I don't know what's going on. But so I love this idea. What was your thought behind this?
This came out of I had recently rewatched Chasing Amy. I don't remember why. And then, my writing partner made me watch Mild Ass, which I had heard about but not seen. And seeing the two of those films in conversation with each other was just an immediate thing that happened in my head. And you had emailed me a while ago wondering if I wanted to come back on. And finally I was like, my first thought was like, I have got to tell, like, Jen, we've got to do this. And then you suggested the wonderful third movie, which I had not even heard of, but watched yesterday and fell madly in love with. So, you know, it's sex in movies is such a weird topic right now, because it feels like we're fighting with 20-year-olds about what is allowed, which is feels extremely opposite to what the dynamic was when we were 20, you know? So, I just think it's an interesting female sexuality in particular is the charged topic. We never seem to have a problem with men's sexuality on screen. That's fine. But we're the strange witches that have unusual ways. So
yes. Yeah, you know, like coming of age movies for girls. Ooh, gross, that kind of thing.
It exactly.
Was interesting to read some of the contemporaneous reviews of some of these movies, especially Antonia's Line, which is the third movie that I suggested, that I actually saw like on video. I just happened upon it in the 90s, forgot about it, or it didn't really click with me. Mm-hmm. And then about 10 years later, we watched it in film school, and like, where has this movie been all my life? So it's been a favorite. I was glad to revisit it because it's been a while. But so it's interesting to kind of go back and look at these. I am so glad you mentioned you hadn't seen My Old Ass either, because there was something about the title that was just kind of putting me off. And I'm one of those people, like, I can do a little Adam Sandler, Will Ferrell, like that kind of thing.
Right.
It's too gross or whatever. That's like a big turnoff for me. So the title was just like, do I want to see this movie? And Sob Buckets, we'll get into that. Like, my God, this movie moved me unexpectedly. So I was so glad that you kind of lit a fire under me to finally watch this thing. And yeah, Chasing Amy, I think, is a perfect first film. It's one that we felt, I think, like everybody has the same idea, not at all. But we had different ideas about it at the time. Over time, thoughts on it have changed. I know some friends who loved it then and hate it now, and vice versa. So what was your reaction to the movie? Did you see it originally when it came out?
I didn't see it when it came out. I was a little bit young for it, I think, or I just don't, I hadn't really delved into indie film yet when it came out, but I started getting into Kevin Smith, after Dogma came out, because I thought that was a really interesting film, and, you know, everyone talks about Chasing Amy as like his great, his real movie, like, you know what I mean?
Like,
it's,
film.
I don't know. I found it really interesting at the time. Like I remember very clearly there was that, there was a DVD Kevin Smith put out in the mid 2000s of him doing like a lecture tour, of colleges. And at one point a young college girl who I think was a lesbian, like, confronts him about the movie and is like, you know, weren't you making the point that all lesbians can be changed? And I was really affected by that conversation, because it was honestly not a topic I had thought of watching the movie. But the reason I really wanted to talk about it with you was that, like, I feel like this movie is such a perfect encapsulation of that 90s phenomenon in media where the word bisexual didn't exist.
No, not at all. You were like, either one or the other. Like, fluidity wasn't a thing.
No.
Yeah.
And like, as a, you know, I'm bisexual, and as a younger person seeing stuff like this, where there was so much media where this concept of a particularly female sexuality was like, you were straight or it was time to panic because you were gay. And there was no middle ground whatsoever. And, you know, that's really, you know, I don't think Kevin Smith misses that. Like, he recognizes that, like, Joey Lauren Adams' character, she faces ostracization from both sides and judgment from both sides. So he managed to capture the essence of biphobia, but I don't think the movie ever says the word.
Like,
it's just everyone is shocked that she's one or the other. So I found that such an interesting thing about this film.
Yeah, you kind of wonder how they would approach that today, for sure. It'd be a whole different thing. And he even talks about that. He's like, this was made by a man who was like 26, 27 and still learning about sex in his own life. And so I think he knows, like, there's stuff that he would do differently. But it's so good you pointed that out, because, you know, I have many friends who are bisexual and friends that are gay and straight and had all kinds of ideas. And I remember in the 90s, like, even Sex and the City, I think it's Cynthia Nixon gives this speech about, like, there's bisexual land. It doesn't exist. Like, she gives this whole thing about you're either, you know, you're driving down the highway to one or the other. And it was this whole, like, militant attitude that really was a little strange. And so I know that, I think I remember seeing an interview that Smith gave where he actually got the idea for the film. I think it was twofold. He was dating Joey Lauren Adams at the time and just wanted to write her a good role. And also, it was the movie Go Fish. There was a conversation in the film where some characters, like, do you think I'm a sellout because I slept with a man or something like that? And that sparked an idea, like, whoa, what would that be like? Or what is that idea? And yeah, so I do think there's some issues there. I remember somebody I'm close to was really obsessed with this movie and I could never figure out why. And another friend finally told me it's because the first girl he had a massive crush on in high school was gay. Mm-hmm. And so he was just obsessed, like, you know, he gotten his heart broken chasing a woman who couldn't love him back. This is a movie, Smith says, about a man who finally realizes he needs to grow up, but he loses everything important to him. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's this obsession with kind of, it's this obsession with sexuality that drives him towards that edge. And it's a really sad thing, because it's
so
just
sad,
you know. And it's interesting too how the movie is also silently about male sexuality. You know, there is this suggestion when they get to the, you know, when he brings up having a threesome with Jason Lee and Joey Lauren Adams.
Oh my
Adams
god,
again.
I love Jason Lee in this.
Yeah, that maybe Jason Lee's whole problem is that he's been in love with his friend the whole time.
Yeah.
And, like, it's all done, like, non-verbally. Like, Ben Affleck kisses him and Jason Lee looks like he's been hit with a truck. And then they never talk about it again. But it's like, you know, I think it's now in the view of, you know, 20 years later, the it's just such a good time capsule of how confusing that discussion was in the 90s and how strongly the lines were drawn. I think it is something that older people who are queer have difficulty conveying to young queer people, is like, you don't understand. It was not like,
no.
Yes, there's identity stuff today and there are different lines being drawn. But back then it really felt like there were cement walls between what you could be and what you couldn't be. And the film, I think, really captures it beautifully. I mean, I know there's still controversy over the idea that now she's with a man, now she's with a woman. Like, but I do think, the perspective has given a lot of worth to the film, I think.
I think it's big-hearted, and I think it's done in the earnestness of everyone is trying to figure their stuff out.
Yeah.
Basically, like, no matter what your sexual orientation is, or even if you don't know and you're, you know, figuring out your own identity, like we said, the Jason Lee character, and oh my God, I think he might be the best thing in this movie. He's
I love
incredible.
him so much.
Yes. Yeah. I kind of wish he had a, you know, bigger career. He's one of those people like Steve Zahn where you see them and you're like, why aren't they massively successful? Yes. But anyway, so this is a film that, yeah, I think really does kind of, it's maybe the best thing he had done at that time period. For example, I think Dogma is fascinating. And another thing I love about this is I'm somebody who, I mean, I was born Catholic. I went to Catholic school like very briefly. We're not super, you know, we were never super religious, but you understand what the Catholicism, all the things that were taught does to you, and these ideas, and also this like ownership and of sexuality and good and bad and what it has done to the Ben Affleck character. And it's just terribly, like you said, it is so sad.
Yeah. It's really interesting too, because there's so many conversations in the film that are about sex in a very casual way. And I don't know if that's how you remember the 90s, but I remember that. Like, it was very easy to talk about sex, but hard to talk about sexuality. And now it feels like it's flipped. It's very interesting. The thing I've always loved about Kevin Smith is just like, he doesn't have an ounce of pretension about him. He tells his movies really from his own experience and his own life. And he's kind of not ashamed to be who he is. And he has a lot of empathy as a filmmaker. And, you know, you can argue about the merits of his films, but like, he seems like a genuinely likable filmmaker. And I think this movie is such a good example of what he's really good at.
Yeah. And I think this era too, you know, like my film school thesis was on Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And part of it was about just the generation, Sex, Lies, and Videotape and independent filmmaking. And we were having these conversations, and you didn't need like massively huge stars to be in these movies. And, you know, it was like people you would hang out with. These were the stars of movies, this kind of thing. Like, we see Casey Affleck just walking up to a table. I think Matt Damon is in this movie for like half a second before they became, you know, huge stars. And I think, yeah, it is such a time capsule for a number of reasons. And it is very sad that, you know, we can't have these conversations today, or they're being so buttoned up that maybe we were a little too free with, like, it was everywhere in the 90s a little bit. Like, we made too many of these films, kind of. But
maybe
at least we were doing that, you know, like your friends could make a movie and they still can, but now we're just so inundated by this idea of superheroes and, you know, intellectual property and, content. And it's, yeah, we're missing that thing, which makes my old ass an interesting, partner for this movie, because it's MGM, it's Amazon. And it was one that could easily slip through the cracks, but I do encourage you to seek that out amid so much bad content on Amazon. Yeah,
it's kind of a unicorn, really. Like, how did this film get studio backing and get a theatrical release in 2024? Yeah. Like, I think it is maybe my favorite film I saw last year, but like, I kind of can't, it feels like a 90s movie. It feels like that kind of movie that is just very intimate and made from a very warm and personal place that, yeah, absolutely, as you said, like does not stack up against superheroes at the box office. And it didn't do well at the box office. You know, I still don't think it's made its money back, but it is a phenomenal little film. Like
It
it
really
just,
is. Yeah.
you know, I having made like a little intimate movie
I
about
was reminded
girls,
of yours.
yeah, I just wept from beginning to end because I was like, oh my God, this is what I could have done with $2 million or however much I think it was $10 million. Like, make something this beautiful and have the time to do it and put Aubrey Plaza in it. But you know, it was so glorious to see what is essentially a very indie feeling movie get that level of respect by the town. And I, you know, that's a testament to the filmmaker, and I hope we see so much more of her. Like, this was her second film, and yeah, I hope she makes 50 more.
I know, incredible actress turned writer director. This is a film that, again, I think I was talking to you about it off air, but it's a film that, like, the title was putting me off, and I wasn't sure if this was going to be the thing that I wanted to watch. And yeah, it just totally slayed me. I did not see, I don't want to spoil it because I think a lot of people did miss this movie. And I will say you think it's, just like a funny coming of age thing. And it has a third act surprise that will knock you for a loop, but it's relatable. It's universal. And I think everyone can see something in this film, and it's just beautifully done. Aubrey Plaza is just a terrific screen presence. I'm still like trying to get everyone to watch like Emily the Criminal, which she's amazing in, and Black
Phenomenal movie.
Bear. And yeah, I wish I would have seen this. This would have easily been in my top 10 or top 15 for sure. Because last year was kind of an uneven year, I felt like, for
It
films.
was.
Yeah. But this so beautiful, and I am kind of a sucker for the films that, no matter like what you said about weeping from start to finish, films about somebody moving on to a different phase in their life, and there's nothing more perfect than that time when you're leaving home and going to college, or that idea of becoming an adult that just kind of pulls at you because it reminds me of, oh gosh, one niece is just done with school and another one is approaching it.
Yeah, it is really set. It captures a perfect moment of that transition. And you know, I really think that so many people miss this movie because you hear the premise and you think you know what the movie is going to be, and it's like, oh, I've seen that movie, and it's absolutely not that movie. Like, it's just a 100% not what you're expecting. And God, it's beautiful too. Like, the cinematography is gorgeous. The whole thing looks like it's a golden hour. Like, it's just this phenomenal setting. But yeah, in terms of the female sexuality here, we have a completely flipped dynamic where
Oh
you've
my
got a
God.
lead character who thinks she is gay, has always been gay, and then develops feelings for a boy and is thrown by that. And there's a great scene where she has kind of a confessional moment with one of her friends where she's like, I might not be totally gay. And like there, you feel a sense of real risk that she could be rejected. Which is, it's such a mind twist, I think, to older millennials who like went through the opposite thing of having to come out and being afraid that we were rejected for not being straight. And so the idea of kids being like, I might not be queer. Is that okay? And it's a scene that's handled very beautifully and very gently. But the script also plays with gender in some really interesting ways.
Yeah, he is more sensitive than she is. She's rowdy. She wants to sleep with everyone. She has the more conventional, if this was a straight movie, like she would be the dude,
Yeah.
essentially.
And there's the Justin Bieber sequence, which I don't want to spoil it, but completely flips the genders. He's dressed up as a Justin Bieber fan with little barrettes and a pink shirt, and like she is playing Justin Bieber. And it's like that's something you could not do in the 90s. If you flipped gender dynamics in that way in a movie, people would have lost their minds.
Oh my God.
You know, and this is just treated as this very normal. Like the guy is not threatened by it in any way, shape, or form. He seems very kind of he seems almost kind of gender ambivalent. He's got long, beautiful hair and has, yeah, as you said, has no problem being sensitive and kind of the more emotionally open one. It struck me having seen Chasing Amy again so recently, like, wow, the conversation has completely evolved into something else over the last 30 years. And the lines are in such wildly different places now. And there is a sense of fluidity. Like, cause it's a question for her in the film. She feels momentarily confused about liking this guy, from a sexuality standpoint, but then it's never an issue again. It's fine.
Where it's so scary for the Joey Lauren Adams character. And I do think it's interesting to pair these movies together, because when I was looking at contemporaneous reviews and I was reading Roger Ebert's on Chasing Amy, and it's also quoted in the Wikipedia for it, the same section that kind of like caught my eye, which is, while the surface of his film, this is the Kevin Smith movie, sparkles with sharp, ironic dialogue, deeper issues are forming, and Chasing Amy develops into a film of touching insights. Most romantic comedies place phony obstacles in the way of true love, but Smith knows that at some level there's nothing funny about being in love. It's a dead serious business in which your entire being is at risk. And that seems to be for both of these people, like, what am I doing? This could change my entire identity and my entire future. Yeah.
And it's so interesting, because it does seem like the cultural conversation around sexuality now, like, there is this desire, it seems like, in younger generations to have a label that is written in stone. Like, you should have your business card with your sexuality written on it. And it's fine, whatever sexuality it is, but that's what it is. And that's the faction you belong to. And, like, you know, it's nice to see a movie like My Old Ass in encouraging that kind of fluidity. There has been, you know, movies quietly, and I would say Chasing Amy does this to a degree as well, saying, like, does it really matter? You love who you love.
Yeah.
And that doesn't need to be written in stone somewhere.
Yeah. We're not on a baseball team. You don't have to. Yeah. You know, it's not. Yeah. Everyone's welcome on the bus kind of thing. Like, we're all in there. It kind of also reminded me of when I saw Kinsey for the first time.
Yeah.
That was the first time I had been approached by this idea of, you know, the scale, how many people are really in the middle and what that is like. And I remember seeing this in a theater. It was like around Thanksgiving, and I was seeing it for the award season, and some of the people were, like, you know, freaked out by this visibly in the theater, and others were nodding. And it was just interesting. And I think, you know, that came out, I want to say, like, 07 or around that time period. And since then, we have gotten, more embrace of fluidity and stuff like that. And so it's interesting that research happened so long ago.
Yeah.
But we've been afraid to address it. Yeah.
Yeah. Kinsey's a great movie to bring up. I saw that in theaters too, and remember being kind of blown away by the content. I feel like that's a movie that's maybe 10 years ahead of its time, honestly.
I don't know if people, because
you think of that in context of, you know, Brokeback Mountain had come out in what, 05, 06?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And like, that was another movie where it was like, the thing is that they're gay. And it's like, well, they're having sex with both men and women and seem to want to be with this male partner, but, like, I think they're bi. And, like, that was not a conversation.
No.
It was the gay cowboy movie,
yeah.
You know, and it and like 2 years later or 3 years later, Kinsey comes out and it's like,
yeah,
maybe it's not so concrete.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's interesting to think of film having this conversation over time,
you know,
and, mm-hmm. and different filmmakers putting their kind of spin on this idea of how much do we let the walls around identity affect our actual lives? Like, how much do you want to suffer because of someone else's definition of your sexuality?
Or society, and now it's just getting scary, but, you know, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, now we've gone back to 1938, so.
Yes. Yes, I think my old ass was beautiful. It was obviously, you know, the most regal of these independent, of the two independent films. Kevin Smith's was, it feels like was made on a more shoestring budget, or
Oh,
maybe.
250,000. Yeah, it
Yeah,
was made for nothing.
exactly. You know, but damn impressive what you can do exactly with a good script, because that's a film where I think maybe the sum of its parts is better than the whole thing overall. Like some of those
Yeah.
speeches you're not going to forget. Like especially that speech in the car that Affleck gives her, and then her reply. You know, usually you see a declaration of love and oh my God, it's the most romantic thing ever. But for her, it is so scary, and you
Yeah.
totally understand why. Yeah. And then this was what was going on in the mid-90s in America, whereas over in Europe for Antonia's Line, this was a Dutch film, a Dutch feminist movie that kind of embraces everything. She sort of called it like anti-society or conformity. It's sort of, you know, letting your freak flag fly, and there's some magical realism. It's just beautiful. It's a matriarch. It spans 50 years. Just a gorgeous film. Weird. I always forget
Weird.
how weird it is. It starts out like almost like an Ingmar Bergman movie where you're watching it. Like you were probably like, what the hell did Jen recommend? Like it's heavy, you know, she's gonna die. And you know, you have this like voiceover and you're not sure what's happening. And then it turns into like this almost fairy tale kind of thing. But this is a film that took Marlene Gorris, the filmmaker. It did win Best Foreign Film over here, years to get made in Europe, and she had to find a place that could believably portray 50 years post World War II to the 90s, and found it in Belgium finally. And she said it did so much better in America than over in Europe. They just didn't
Interesting.
really get it. They thought it was good, but not that good. And we really loved it. There were a few critics that were like, oh, it's all female rage and this and that. And you have people that understood, like Ebert giving it 4 stars and just, again, big hearted. Yeah.
Yeah, I was so interested though by the amount of reviews that did call it a fairy tale.
Yes.
And I was like, what? Is the fantasy element that women can like have their own lives and be
That's
happy and that
true.
there are still men that will love them? Like that,
Oh my gosh.
what about this is screaming fairy tale? 'Cause it has no, like it does have some magical realism. And I did think of it sort of in context of those movies like, you know, oh, stuff like The Secret of Rhone Inish and
Yes,
things like
that's what
that
I was
have
thinking.
that
Yeah.
touch of magical realism, but literally every single review is like, it's a feminist fairy tale. And I'm like, why is this, you know, where there have been communes of women deciding to live
Yeah,
their
that's
own
true.
way for centuries, and people are acting like they're elves. But no, I loved this film, you know, the way it is just such an accept, you know, it feels revolutionary in that it is such an acceptance of these women are whatever they want to be. And those traits are not always positive, you know, the
No.
granddaughter that is kind of,
Not,
you
yeah,
know, not
interested in her.
super emotional and not super
Yeah.
caring about her child because she's very obsessed with her work. Like, but again, like she's in a community that fosters who she is and accepts who she is, and the kid is not neglected. And, you know, I that is such a beautiful idea. That it also feels like a film that's very much in context with like Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and yet, you know, European women filmmakers have had a better handle, I think, on portraying real women than American filmmakers for quite a while.
Yeah, I remember when I like revisited this in college, and I remembered little snippets from seeing it in high school, just renting it and just kind of being shocked back in the 90s, like, oh my goodness. But watching it again, later, I remember like just some of the lines of dialogue that are so simple, yet just they still seem to like cut right to the idea. Like this farmer who has always had, feelings for her, wants to come over and propose and, like ask if she wants a husband. Like, why would I want a husband?
Yeah,
Yes.
that
Like,
scene is so great.
he's kind of like crushed for a second. Like, what do you mean? And she said, well, I do have the odd chore that I'm not able to do. And it would be so kind if you came over and like, well, what would I get in return? And she's like, vegetables, eggs, coffee, like, that kind of thing. And he said, well, I have that, but he's not willing to let that go. And he's just a good, kind man and, packs up his sons. That's the other line in that scene that I love, which is like, my sons need a mother and like, but I don't need your sons. And it shocks him for a minute. You don't? No. And I do love the daughter Danielle. She is the one who has the magical realism touches, and she sees things like a funeral at the beginning where the woman sits up and starts singing My Blue Heaven. She just decides she wants to have a baby on her own. She doesn't want a husband to go with it. Her mom's very open, like, well, we can't have anyone around this countryside because everyone's in everyone's business and it's just going to be a thing. And so they go to the city just to find, a husband, but they form this unusual family of outsiders in their community, and just kind of it grows and grows, men and women, just, people with special needs. There are people running from things. It's really beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, something that it does that's so powerful is addresses this fear women have that if they ask for what they really want and that
Yeah.
they're clear about what they really want, no man will love them. And
Yep.
that's certainly something we're still hearing echoes of today in this kind of manosphere rhetoric of like,
Yeah.
women don't think they need us. And it's like, well, maybe they don't need you. So, but what if you wanted to be their companion
Yes,
anyway?
or a true partner.
And
Yeah.
all of the women find that because none of them want traditional relationships. Even
No.
the granddaughter, ends up with her school friend because he makes her feel comfortable and happy. And maybe she doesn't feel necessarily passionate love for him, but he adores her for who she
Yes.
is. And, that's the level she's willing to accept that relationship on. But that feels like, I don't know when I've ever seen that in another film where there's just this succession of men that are like, all right, well, that's fine. You've defined your terms on what this relationship is going to be. And like, I'm good with that. And genuinely, in the best relationships I've had in my life, that's been the dynamic. So it feels like it's hitting at something very true, but very rarely talked about that,
Yeah.
women defining what they want is an okay thing. And with any partner worth their salt should be a completely safe thing. And I think that's what those film reviews were calling a fairy tale, which is really like
Yeah.
upsetting, but,
It is. Yes. I think, sometimes my last relationship really suffered from lack of clarity. It was more of a situationship. And when I was finally clear, or I believed things he said, and that's when, he would get scared and do things. And so watching this again, and it's like, I don't think I was asking for the moon and the stars to actually, after this meant, that much patience and that long, like, this should be this. And so that is really interesting about the film, I think. I also love just some of the, the people that form this unusual fantasy or family. Like Crooked Finger is the most heartbreaking character. He's a family friend who educates. He's a depressive and he stays in his house, but being such a partner and being involved in these people's lives and teaching kids really does give him a sense of purpose for as long as it's able, obviously. But I found him just completely moving. I found like Dee Dee, her arc is just beautiful. When the little girl who's obsessed with death, who we find out was the one narrating the whole thing, writes this, poem for Dee Dee, and it's like after she dies, but she's not dead, but that way she can hear it. And it's like an embrace of death and living, and season after season. It's just, it's pastoral, it's beautiful. Yeah.
And I really appreciate it too that it doesn't pretend that there aren't threats and
and
danger,
darkness.
especially to
Whew.
women living like this. You know, there's a rapist lurking around the
Yes.
edges of the story, and you know, there's some fairly graphic violence and
Yeah.
rape scenes, and you know, I think it would be a little disingenuous if like there was no threat to this
Yeah.
community of very empowered women, because that's just a reality, and the film doesn't take that lightly, and I really appreciated it. I think it would have been a much lesser film if it really had been a fairy tale where like they're just
Yes.
living out their feminist happiness and the village is all thrilled about it, and you know,
Yeah.
like it, there's real opposition to them.
Yeah.
Another film that does that a little bit, I think, was Chocolat.
Yes, that's such a good point.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that it was it's a little more kind of Disneyfied, but it does have essentially the same themes of these women that are forming female communities and how that is reacted to by proponents of traditional society. Yeah, it's just nice. It's nice to see these themes running through films and know that there are filmmakers, often female filmmakers, that are talking about these things in a really thoughtful and inclusive way, like an engaging way. It's not a screed. It's not a demand of the audience that they accept this. It's an invitation, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good point about Chocolat, because another one I thought of that is a movie that like I saw and probably two other people was one called The Sower, Sower, and it came out in France a few years ago. And it was, I don't remember which war, but I think it was based a little bit in history, and then it took a little fairy tale legacy, or you know, it took a little fairy license there, but where the men were actually taken, so they either couldn't fight back or taken to fight a war. I can't remember which. And so the women are kind of left to fend for themselves. And after so long, you know, without men, they start coming up with stories and getting more amorous and thinking like, well, if a man shows up, we will share him and this will all be a thing. And they start like telling these stories. And then sure enough, a man does show up. And so, and what happens, and just the way that they're, you know, it's very matter of fact and it's beautiful. And I think European women they embrace that a little more. Here in America, we're scared of these ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you think of women talking too.
Oh
Sarah
yeah.
Polley's
Oh,
movie, and you know
terrifying. Yeah.
that certainly the opposite of a fairy tale. That is a
Yeah.
brutal, brutal movie. But you know, I think there is a sense that women do understand that their congregation is a threat to insecure men.
Yeah.
And that's this theme and their discussion. Literally, I mean, I think Women Talking captured that so well, is this idea that like the idea that women can get together and reason something out and make a decision without the input of men really scares the shit out of some
Yes.
men. And that's very dangerous for women. And like that is a constant in really kind of a lot of the films we're talking about is this idea about how the genders interact and what power they have to define what the other one's role should be.
Yes, absolutely. And going back to a lot of these films, you know, Antonia's line is multi-generational, but a lot of these also deal with coming of age that we're talking about. Chasing Amy is a few years older. But other films that, has there been anything that you have really gravitated to in the last, I don't know, X number of years that you think is getting it right, maybe here in America? Or I know you brought up Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yeah, I mean, I
yeah.
thought that was a beautiful
Beautiful.
film
Yeah.
about a you know, a world without men, and that's
Yes.
kind of a female filmmaker that seems very dedicated to that idea. She's very clear in her, and I love her to death. But I'm trying to think of anything else I have seen recently.
Yeah, and I think it's great too that mild ass, you know, the level of integrity, and just like for Antonia's line, she shows good and bad in both genders, which is super important. And so yeah, it is interesting when you go back and you read some of these reviews, you're like, are we watching the same movie? Why was this that scary? But then you do remember the 90s a little bit, but now we're getting back to that again. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not a conversation we can afford to cede ground on. We can't, because it was really unhealthy for our generation to grow up in this rigid, society that was so misogynist and so homophobic. And it's not that those elements are not present today, but like, yeah, My Old Ass is a really nice reminder that things have moved forward. The conversation has moved forward in some ways, and it's still a difficult conversation, but it's about different things. And I think there's a broader range of acceptance, and that's really beautiful.
It is. And it's a Canadian film, which I found.
That's right. It is Canadian.
And I love
Americans
that.
just can't.
Yeah,
We
we
do
just
not
can't get
support
it
with female
together.
filmmakers in America.
Yeah, we got to work on that a little bit. Yes. Yeah. But I did love your movie, of course. Do you have anything you're working on?
Not, no.
Nothing you can talk about or no?
I am working on trying to maintain a career in the collapse of America,
I know.
and the
It's so
industry.
crazy right now, especially after the writer's strike. My goodness.
Yeah, it's been a weird couple years in Hollywood. It does feel like people are starting to get their feet under them again. But those of us that were, always on the edge of breaking into it are still, it now feels like we have a whole new wall to go through. But yeah, I'm not working. I'm working on a Breakfast Club update about a bear attack.
I love that idea.
It has nothing to do with feminism, but it has a lot to do with bears.
I mean, I'll watch the hell out of that. Are you
Yeah,
kidding?
I think you'd like it. But
Are you still doing script analysis?
I am. That's my day job right now is reading other people's scripts, doing private coaching and working for a couple of different places for that. And then I have also started a newsletter in the last few months that I just wanted to, I read 30 or 40 scripts a month, and you notice common themes as you're reading them. And so I just love to do I do a free monthly newsletter called I Have Some Notes. It's on Beehive, where I just kind of condense like what was my biggest note that I gave the most often over the last month. And like, here's how I encounter it. Here's how it pops up in scripts. Here's some strategies that I would suggest if you're getting this note that you can
Oh,
combat it.
that's
So.
so good.
I think it's hopefully helpful for writers kind of at any skill level and just anyone who wants to understand a little bit more about, because my big
Storytelling.
problem when I started was knowing how to fix scripts. Like I could write a first draft, but then I wouldn't, rewriting was really difficult for me because I would think like, well, but I got it. I did what I wanted to do and I don't really know how to make it better. And so this is kind of tackling it from an analytical standpoint. And so that's if anyone wants to follow me on there, I do that once a month.
That's incredibly valuable. And I think it also will help, I'm sure it's been a very helpful for your own writing as well. And just as a film goer, you probably can like pick up on things immediately when you're watching movies, like, oh yeah, I read 20 scripts like this. Yes.
Yeah, it is funny what it does to your brain to read that many scripts that consistently. I feel like I've become kind of a machine at knowing I will be able to tell what is going to happen in a script from the first scene,
That's
like 80%
amazing.
of the time now.
Now, My Old Ass, how were you on that? Did you kind of
The twist in that absolutely blew me away. Yeah, because you
I was thinking it was telegraphing a different thing, and I won't say
And
what that thing is.
it's easy to fall for that. Like
Yes.
it seems very obvious what it could be, and then it
Exactly.
isn't, and it devastates
Yes.
everyone, and it's so beautiful. And yeah,
Yes. Yeah.
I just wept. I just spent most of
Oh
that.
my
Like, it's
God,
not
I
a
was
sad movie. It's a
crying buckets.
delightfully fun
Oh
movie, but
yeah, just
like,
the end.
I don't know. There was something so human about that film that
It's embrace of empathy and humanism and just, it makes you feel like, I don't know. It's sad, but it's a good sad is what I can say without like, no, this isn't, this isn't Sophie's Choice. I know we're talking about crying here, but that's a totally, different kind of sad.
The movie that actually brought to mind to me as well was The Man in the Moon,
Oh,
the
that's a
Reese
beautiful
Witherspoon movie.
movie.
which has a very similar like country girl vibe in interacting with first love and family issues kind of feeling.
Oh yeah, with the siblings.
Yeah, it really, really sparked a resemblance. I loved that movie growing up because I'm a masochist to that. That movie ends with someone getting run over by a tractor and
dying. I know.
And this is not quite that bad. But, but yeah, those, I don't know. There's so many lovely films about girls growing up that get, I feel like, automatically dismissed as chick flicks or, you know, pretentious stuff. And
Or called for fairy tales.
I remember, I can't remember what filmmaker it was. It might have been Joss Whedon, so disregard the source, but saying that female characters are often really great for people of both genders because we're more prepared to accept strong changes of emotion and like emotional development in women. And so I don't know. I would show teenage boys my old ass if I could. I would herd them into a room and force them to watch it. They would be crying by the end too, I think.
Yeah. Well, recently I rewatched Mulholland Drive. I was going to talk about it anyway. But then after David Lynch passed and we were going to do it for this episode devoted to LA movies. And when I was watching it, I was just realizing that through his career, he knew that like to get to the heart of any thing right away, you cut to the girl.
Yeah.
Because we feel things just more viscerally, more immediately. We, you know, our hearts are open, our minds are more open, we're more, we experience things on a more, I don't know, just a different level. And he really did that again and again and again. And that's why I think we're drawn to his women who are complicated and messy and they experience trauma in a different way. And yeah, I think, you know, female protagonist people. Yes.
Yeah. Cut to the girl. I think there's another podcast you can launch.
Yes. Cut to the girl. Exactly. No, but this was really good, Jessica. I want to thank you so much for doing this and for pushing me to watch my old ass. I really appreciate it. You'll have to come back with any topic of your choosing. You know, script notes, whatever. Bear movies? We don't know.
Yeah. Oh, bear movies. Yeah, we could do bear movies. Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jen. I always love talking with you. It's always so much fun.
Of course.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research, equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as a dollar per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.